Well, it's really to go through what I used to go through. I've bought my wife, my daughter, her husband, their daughter, my son, brought them out here just to see where the old man grew up and what he did. And I was here a few years ago with my mum just for a weekend, and I got lost. I didn't know where I was going, and I would get lost again, except one of my sisters knows Dubbo pretty well because she's got a daughter that was here. So we've used her as a guide, and she brought us to this park here, and I said, well, you know, where is it? And she said, well, it's, you know, blah, blah. And I said, is that anywhere near the Paramount Tennis Club? And she says, well, I think so. So I've just walked down here now, and sure as good, it is the Paramount Tennis Club. It's also the Dubbo Bridge Club, but this is where I used to play my tennis, or most of my tennis anyway. And I just want to go and see the old high school, which is not a high school anymore, but the primary school, and where I lived, and just show my children who live in South Africa now what I was all about as a youngster.
And it was 1956 that you left Dubbo, Bob?
1956, we shouldn't talk about that because that, you know, according to me, that's about 55 years ago. So, God, I didn't even think I was 55. I didn't think I'd get to 55. But, yeah, it's a long time ago, and I've only, in that time, I think I've been back here two or three times, you know, so it's amazing how it's changed.
You were born here, Bob, and we're standing in Elston Park. That's the lovely park that you're referring to, and the original Paramount Tennis Court's behind us. Some people might know there's a new Paramount Tennis Court just on Wingee Warra Street around the corner. What are some of your memories around here? Bob, I know you were looking around the place before, sort of just familiarising yourself with it.
Well, some of my memories, of course, are here at the club where you used to come on a Saturday and a Sunday, and my dad and I used to water and roll the old sand courts and mark the lines and things like that. That's a memory. But my memories of Dubbo was just no worries. Life was grand. It was a small town of about 10,000 people in those days. Unfortunately, it was spoilt by having to go to high school and primary school, but you know, but life was great. I played cricket, I played a little bit of rugby, I swam, I did athletics. It was just a country environment in a bigger town, but it was very, very peaceful, and I hope, even though it's bigger, I hope it's still peaceful.
Was it unusual for someone to come from a country area like this and go as far as you did in the world of tennis? Because now we see it so professionalised, and there's so many coaching clinics from when children are really small to when they're growing up, and you see, you know, 16-year-olds competing in Wimbledon. Was it unusual for a country boy like you to go all the way?
Well, initially, yes. I say initially because twice a week we used to have library study. And, of course, all my classmates used to head for the history or the geography or the science or whatever it is. I used to head for the sport. And I only had one book on sport in tennis. And I used to grab that book every time. And I opened it up, and there was an aerial photograph of Wimbledon. And I said to my mates, one day I will play there. And they... You know, get out of here, Hewitt. I mean, you're a country bumpkin, and no country bumpkins get to Wimbledon and all this stuff. I said, mark my words, I will get there. Well, the last laugh is on my side because I got there, and I never won the singles, but I won the doubles a couple of times, and I won the mixed a couple of times. So I've had a reasonable amount of success. I was from the country. But you had, when I moved to Sydney... You had Jan Lehane from the country. Tony Roach later on came from the country. And several players came from the country, but not quite as far away as I did. But so a boy or a girl from the country, they set their mind to it. They have the talent. They get the proper coaching. They can achieve just as much as the kids in the big cities. They might be a little bit backward in terms of their development, sporting development, because the facilities are not all the same. You don't have as many good players to compete with. But if you can keep up with them a little bit and then get to the city, you can do anything you want.
We're talking with Bob Hewitt, tennis champion. He mentioned he won Wimbledon. He also has won the French Open, the US Open and the Australian Open in the doubles. And just casting your mind back to that time when you're at the top of the world in the doubles tennis fixtures, what are some of your memories of living around that time? I mean, obviously the fame and the prestige of competing in some of these famous venues.
Well, every tournament is different. And nowadays it's very different. The players make money. We didn't. I got a £5 cash voucher the first time I won Wimbledon, and I had to buy something worth £5 or more. And I was very friendly with Fred Perry, the great English player of the 30s, and he had a clothing line, and he says, "Give me that bloody thing here." He says, "Here's £5. I'll tell the All England club that you bought shirts for me for more than £5." But to sum up the difference of the two circuits, you know, then and now, is we had fun. We were all friendly with a group. We hated each other when we played, of course, but we respected generally, not everybody, but we respect most of fellow competitors. Whereas today they're less friendly. They don't want to become too friendly because they've got to play them or may play them at some time. And it didn't worry us that we were playing our best friends. He wanted to win. I wanted to win. So be it. Seems to worry the guys now. We didn't make money, but we stayed at cheaper hotels. We got our own hotels most of the time, whereas nowadays the players get the official hotels, which are, you know, 4 and 5 star, and that's great for the players. But I think they miss out on a little bit. It wasn't a business for us. It's a business for the players today, and that's good in some respects, but it's bad in others.
And most importantly, you were using the wooden racket as well.
Oh, we were using the wooden racket, and Fru and I, my partner, Fru, I first played with Fred Stolle from Australia, and then I moved to South Africa and I played with Fru McMillan, and we were the first people to use a composite racket made by Fischer in Austria, which is a ski company. You know, when we tried this racket, I liked it, Fru didn't. And my racket had a V in it before the head, so I used it and I felt very, very comfortable. Fru's racket that he wanted to use was a solid handle. And so Fru says, "I can't use this racket." And I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" You know, and he says, "Well, you watch me." And he painted the thing black, because the Fisher rackets were black in those days. He painted it black and he used the wooden racket. He got away with it, but it was a little bit naughty. But if anybody had complained about it, I think he would have gotten into trouble. But nobody complained about it.
Fru, you referred to there as Fru McMillan, your long-term doubles partner. And I guess when you've won so many tournaments together and played so many games, you must develop a pretty strong friendship with someone like that.
Well, you know, funnily enough, we have a healthy respect for each other. We were never great mates. Fred Stolle, when I played with Fred for 4 years, we were great mates. We roomed together. But Fru and I are so different. I mean, he's the arty type, you know. He goes to museums and art galleries and operas and things like that, and I fly aeroplanes and water ski and snow ski, and in the middle of a tournament somewhere I'd go off in the States and I'd go and snow ski, and he'd say, "Don't, you're going to break a leg or something." I said, "Then you'll have a holiday, don't worry." And I'd go down the mountain. I've no style. My wife says, "You've got terrible style." And I would say, "Well, don't worry about it. They don't give gold medals for style. They give gold medals for coming first." I didn't come first, but I had a lot of fun.
And it's been a few years now since those times. And I know that you're living in South Africa nowadays with your wife and family. And you probably have lost a little bit of touch on what's happening in Australian tennis. But you wouldn't have been able to ignore that there's been no real big names at the top of the game for a long time now. Is that a cause for concern as a former Australian champion?
Of course it is. I mean, you know, when I started playing the tennis, you know, I had the greats of, you know, Frank Sedgman, Ken McGregor. Then from then, you know, we went into Lou Hoad, Ken Rosewell, Mervyn Rose, Neil Fraser, Roy Emerson, Rod Laver. We had greats from the end of the Second World War up until, I don't know when it was, maybe 1960. And there's been a deterioration since then. And we had like a one-off, you know, one person, John Newcomb, Pat Cash, Leighton Hewitt, as an example. I may have missed out on a couple of them, but
Rafter, and that's about the
Pat
only one.
Rafter, yeah. It's just one guy, and we. Whereas before we had two, three, four. I was a Wimbledon doubles champion, and couldn't even make the four-man Davis Cup team. That's how strong we were, and it's not that I was dropped. I just couldn't make the team. We had better players to fit into the team. And that's what you need. You need that competition to enhance the game. And we're not getting that here. I don't know what they're doing. I can't be critical of the officials at all, nor can I praise them, because I just don't know what's happening. But surely you can't tell me. I know there's a lot of choices for youngsters to make today. But don't tell me that in Australia, sports nuts nation, that you can't get half a dozen males, half a dozen females to be up there somewhere. You know, they don't have to all be number one. They can't all be number one. You don't have to, any of them to be number one. But, you know, to get one or two in the top 10 and another couple in the top 20, that's a healthy nation. We are not a healthy nation, unfortunately, and we used to be. And I would hope that the tennis authorities, I'm sure they're aware of it, but I don't know what they're doing about it.
It's been about 30 years since you retired from the game, and I take it you'd be pretty keen to get back out on the court when you come to a place like this. Do you still have a game yourself, Paul?
No, I don't play now. My body won't take it. I've had about 18 operations in various parts of my body, and the surgeon's waiting for me to get back to have a few more, and I've just said, forget about it. I'm not interested in any more. I've had enough of operations. But no, I don't. I would like to be able to, and I envy the people that are as old as I am, older than me, you know, that they can still go out there somehow or other and play tennis. I just can't do that, but it is a marvellous game.
Well, it's great to have you back in Dubbo, Bob. I hope you have a good time while you're back.
I'm sure I will, and thanks very much.